Welcome to the Sunt Leffen Report. Today we are going to do something different, and I think we're going to do this for the next 10 weeks. We are going to start doing a class on apologetics. I'm of the opinion that my pastor is right. That is that we are facing the end times. Simply put, it's here. The end times is here. How long we have left, I can't tell. So are we ready for the end times? And my answer is, I don't know how long we have left. How long? And that's important to think about. So as this is a Christian show, I will start with a reading from Matthew today. This comes from Matthew 5, 21 to 26. You have heard that it was said of them of old, you shall not kill, and whoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment. But I say unto you that whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. And whosoever shall say to his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council. But whosoever shall say, you fool, shall be in danger of hellfire. Therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar, and there remember that your brother has aught against you, leave there your gift before the altar, and go your way. First be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift. Agree with your adversary quickly while you are in the way with him, lest any time the adversary deliver you to the judge, and the judge deliver you to the officer, and you be cast into prison. Verily I say unto you, you shall be by no means come out from there till you have paid the uttermost. Verse 21 starts out with, not as a reference to the sixth commandment, but as a reference to what God said to Noah after the flood was over, Genesis 9:6. Whosoever sheds man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed, for in the image of God made he man. Jesus then adds to this statement, it is a statement that he has authority. It is a statement that he is God. The five words that told us Jesus was God here are, but I say unto you, Jesus is saying he's God. This is a statement that Deuteronomy 18:19 had been fulfilled, that said, I will raise them up a prophet from among their brethren, like unto you, and will put my words in his mouth. And he shall speak unto them that I shall command him. And it shall come to pass that whosoever will not listen to my words, which he shall speak in my name, will I require him. His command, his statement. There's a lot here. I just want you to think about a lot of this. This is one incredible statement. Now, there are families out there. My family is not out of this, and I would like for it to be out of that. But there are families out there that have hatred from brothers and sisters amongst. And I'm just going to tell you, put aside the hatred. Go to your brothers and sisters, your daughters, your sons. Try to make that connection. It's not an easy thing to do. I love my son and my daughter, and you know, I'll be honest, I want that connection, but it's not an easy thing for them to come to me, and I love them, but it's not always an easy thing. Strive to have your family love each other. It's not always an easy thing. And with that said, I'm going to start sharing one of the most important things I've ever taught. And I've taught it for over a period of years. So I'm just going to put this up. Actually, let's make this like this for now. And we'll see if I have to go big. All right. So I wanted to start this it's going to be about 10 weeks. That I'm going to be doing this. This is part one today. Apologetics 101. Again, my pastor has said that these are the end times. We don't know how much longer we have left. And the more I think about it, the more I'm seeing things with Russia and the more I'm seeing things with Turkey. Turkey's doing strange stuff now. And if you haven't seen that, Turkey's now kicking out the Muslim Brotherhood. They have been arresting the Muslim Brotherhood. And what's interesting with that is Erdogan has been considered the head of the Muslim Brotherhood for a while. They have had Muslim Brotherhood here in this country bowing to him when he visits the United States. So how close are we to the end? With that said, I think we need to get armed. We need to be built up and ready. What does that mean? We need to be ready to share the gospel whenever we get a chance. We need to have the knowledge of how to do that. So this class, Apologetics 101, that I put together is based entirely on reaching out to the lost. Next week, I'm going to have, you know, if you're interested in filling out a form, filling out a worksheet while you do this, I have a little worksheet that you can do what we call close notes. You can fill in little slots that'll help you keep the memory going. What I'll do is I'll post the link to that later on. So if anybody wants to do that, this is probably one of the most valuable classes I've taught and most valuable projects I've ever done. All right, let's get going here. All right, so who am I? Just to teach this, just let you know, I have a bachelor's in religion philosophy from Roberts Wesleyan. I have master's in special ed from Nazareth, graduate certificate in intelligence analysis from Henley Putnam. I published works in apologetics. I did something on Brownsville Assembly of God Revival, which is still up there. Cranial sacral therapy I didn't, but the Yahoo Answer site's been taken down, and the Civilization Jihad, Cancer Civilization Jihad is also an act of peace. Let's talk about authority and authority's fall. Now, a teacher, though authoritative, no matter who, can be wrong. It's your job to catch that. So let me tell you of a teacher who was wrong for my personal tale. I was a student in high school, and the teacher gave me a D in a classroom. And I was English class. I had a B average in B. I thought it was a B plus average, if I remember correctly. And I couldn't figure out what I did wrong. I wouldn't have cared if it was a B, but he gave me a D. Like, I went to him. I asked him what I was missing. He couldn't tell me. He just said, "You have a D." Now, in the 80s, when you had a disagreement with if you were a child, you had a disagreement with a teacher, the teacher is always considered right. So I went to the principal, and the principal says, "I have to take his side." I called my parents because there was nothing I could do. My parents came in. They worked for the same school district. There was nothing they could do. What do you do when sometimes that authority is wrong? And I say, use your brain. I've actually seen people preach things that are wrong. And again, you have to keep your biblical values. You have to do the confrontation. It's your job as a believer. You can't keep quiet. You have to talk to them. You don't have to do it in public, but you have to do this. Yes, thank you, Jesus Worldwide. This is about Kirkpatrick. This work that I did was, what's the right way to put it? It was an expose of questions that were written, that were basically posed by the Brownsville Assembly of God themselves. and I examined their response to Brownsville Assembly. It was the Pensacola News Journal that wrote the article. They wrote about 40 news pages on this organization. So that's where my piece comes from. And it got they loved it. Pensacola News Journal loved it, but they couldn't publish it. And it's still out there. And if anybody wants that link, I'll go back one more time. See if I can. Yeah, I have to go forward. Sorry about that. Okay. I want to start out with the importance of logic. And so why do you think, does anybody want to comment on why logic is important? What do you think? Why do you think logic is important? Looking for anybody's thoughts. Why do you think logic is important? I'm hearing crickets for a change. It's usually a little bit more people here. And I think maybe that's because I decided today wouldn't be news. I don't know. Doing something different. All right. Okay. So let's get into this. Logic is the study of reasoning. It determines what is truth. Logic is universally applied and taught often through math classes. But hear what I say. Taught often through math classes. In New York State, we no longer teach logic. This is problematic. Children don't learn logic in math. You know where they learn logic? The principles of and or? They learn it in social studies. You want to know why? Because they can't pass a test if they don't know the difference between and or. They can't pass the social studies exam. They have to know the difference between and or. God forbid we teach them but if and then and if and only if means. And anything else with logic you can think about. They're not taught anymore in high school in New York State. I don't know about other states, but this to me is extremely dangerous. Keep in mind, New York State is a lib state. And this helps people to not find God, in my opinion. Again, I look at logic as a gift from God. And it's a gift from God to draw others to Christ. And you're going to see that. Jesus Worldwide, according to Muslims, it's not important. That is not wrong. It depends on where you are. That's what I'll say. And it depends what time period you're living in. That's what I find interesting. I say it depends because during certain time periods, they'll come out and say it's all important. During time periods where Muslims are in control, it's not important. And that's the truth of it, unfortunately. All right, let's go on. If someone doesn't value logic, what logical argument could you provide to show the importance of logic? I want you to think about that. If someone doesn't value logic, what logical arguments? So this gets really, really difficult. How do you show them the importance of logic? Now, this can be very, very difficult, especially I'm going to pick on Jesus Worldwide, who said this. It's not important to Muslims. You have to be able to show them that everything they do is based on logic. Okay. So if you say you believe in Allah, where do you learn about Allah? Where did you find out that you had to bang your head on the ground? Where did you find out any of these things? What teaches you to do this stuff? Well, let's find out. If you find out where this stuff comes from, doesn't it mean you should be reading more? Okay, so if you want to find out more about Jesus, what do you read? You read the New Testament. Logically, that's what you do. Okay. If you want to find out more about Muhammad, what do you do? Well, you could read, you would think originally you would read the Quran. But Muhammad's only mentioned 4 times in the Quran. So what do you have to read? You could read the Hadith, but there's a lot of stuff in there that's not about him. So what do you read? You read the Sirahs. What tells you to find that? The process, these are all, this is the a form of logic. You go to that. Research is you know, something I love, but how do you find what to research? How do you learn what to do? If you can do math, you're doing logic. That's another thing, which I find fascinating. All right, how about this one? There can be no doubt that the knowledge of logic is of considerable practical importance for everyone who desires to think and infer correctly. This is Alfred Tarski. There can be no doubt that the knowledge of logic is of considerable practical importance. This is why I think every person in the world should learn this should learn the important concept of logic. Logic is, I mean, all knowledge is based off the importance of logic. It's incredibly important that we stay up on this. All right, let's see how this is going to work. I'm probably going to go to, let's try this layout, see if this works better. All right. Okay. And here we go. Next one. Trust in the Lord. I like this passage. Proverbs 3:5. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not lean on your own understanding. Logic is not ours alone. It's not personal. It doesn't belong to somebody. That's important to understand. It doesn't belong to an individual. You have to grasp that. And this is actually of great importance because it's something from the scriptures that tells us to not lean on, we're not supposed to trust our own understanding. When you interpret the Bible, when you read the Bible and you want answers, you have to trust the Bible to find the answers for what you're reading. All right. If you might have to do research in the Bible to find them. The Bible is supposed to interpret the Bible, not you or me. There'll be times when there's little things in there. Yeah. That you have to sit there and think about. Not a question. Can you be wrong? Absolutely. Can I be wrong? Absolutely. Sometimes you just have to find out. And, you know, you can hold those beliefs, but we should always put the Bible as trusting its, you know, as that is the thing, is the one thing that's supposed to interpret itself. When we don't have clear answers, they're not essential. All right, let's go on. Again, logic. Okay, so let's talk about the arguments for God's existence. Proving God's existence in a godless world. Now, I have these pictures here because they are of incredible beauty. And, you know, when I look at paintings, I think about painters. You should just think about that. Don't these look like, aren't these beautiful, beautiful pieces? I mean, even without any touch by man, like the bridge there, that would still be an utter beauty. Oh, unbelievable to see all this. So in apologetics, we start talking about arguments for God, or the question that we really need to start with is, what difference does it make if God exists? This is called the reductio ad absurdum argument. Here we go. God, meaning an all-powerful, perfectly good creator of the universe who offers us eternal life. So we have to start with definitions. So if we define God as meaning an all-powerful, perfectly good creator of the universe, think about that. And he offers us eternal life. Let's see. Next thing. If such a God does not exist, then life is absurd. Let's think about that, okay? If God isn't all-powerful, would it be worth worshiping him? No. If God isn't perfectly good, would he be worth worshiping? No. If he isn't the creator of the universe, I'm not worshiping him. Not worth my time. He offers us eternal life. There has to be something more. Wow. So following that, following those rules, if such a God does not exist, then life is absurd. Yeah. You can't trust anything. That's the sad part. Okay. If God does not exist, life has no meaning, value, or purpose. Think about that. If there's no God that's all-powerful, that's perfectly good, that's not the creator of the universe, and there's no God who's offering us eternal life, where do you get the meaning for your own existence? Where do you get the value? I have yet to find that with atheists. They kind of believe there's meaning, but they can't explain that meaning. And that's kind of scary. Now think about that. What am I talking about with meaning? Why something matters? Value. Value has to do with good and evil, right and wrong. And the next week, we're going to talk about the problem of evil. I think you'll be shocked. Why does something matter? If God doesn't exist, life has no... Does life matter? Think about that. And if we substitute for value, how do we determine what's good and what's right and what's good and evil and right and wrong if there is no such God that is all-powerful and perfectly good? This is, again, these are logical arguments. And with atheists, sometimes you can sit down, you can have these discussions. You don't need all these points. Your job as a Christian is to plant seeds. We get to knock on the door for God, you know, being God's man at that point or woman at that point to share the word of God and using some of these things to provoke them to think. 99% of the time, I think people do not process what they're saying when they hold these points of view that God isn't real. Real, okay. So if God isn't real, what does that mean? Really, are you saying there's no all-powerful, perfectly good creator of the universe? Are you saying that God, I mean, you have to ask these questions because they don't think about it. They just accept it as fact. Ask questions. That's where I'm saying these should be tools. This what I'm giving you is tools to have a conversation, tools to give someone a chance to hear about Jesus Christ. This is your opportunity. So take this. I will have a worksheet if people want to. I'll fill it out during time. I'll have that ready for you next time. I'm sorry I didn't get that ready today. I already have them. I just didn't put them up. Sorry about that. All right, let's think about this purpose here. Goal, reason for something. What if God doesn't exist? Can you have a purpose? If there's no God who's the creator, if there's no God who offers us eternal life, if there's no God who is perfectly good, what's your goal? So right now, my goal is to get this out so we can start doing evangelism. We, me, you, everyone. Why? Because we need to share the word of God in ways we have never done before. I don't care who you're talking to. We have to get the word of God out in new and refreshing ways. And if we meet atheists, we need to be provoking. We need to encourage them to find out what they believe themselves. And if you actually listen to atheists, you'll hear some debates. I think some of the most valuable things you've discovered is they really have never asked the questions themselves. They've only known one answer. This is a problem. And so this is why I say you have to think about this. I'm sorry, Darcy and Rad. I'm going to go on from here. Thank you for joining. All right. And I'm just going to read this one more time. If God, this is, again, the reductio ad absurdum. God, meaning an all-powerful, perfectly good creator of the universe who offers us eternal life. If such a God does not exist, then life is absurd. If God doesn't exist, life has no meaning, value, or purpose. And again, meaning means why something matters. Value has to do with good or evil and right and wrong, and purpose, that goal, that reason for something. If anybody has ever met someone who was suicidal, I've done enough that way that it's, there was a young girl, I will never forget knowing what she was going to be like because she was messed up. And I remember telling the kid who was the youth pastor, he was a fellow student with me, but he was just a few years younger, telling what she was going to be like before we got to the hospital to meet her. I said, she's not going to be able to see tomorrow is real. And if it's really bad, she won't be able to see the next hour as real. If we get lucky, she won't be able to see the next minute as real. To her, God didn't exist. There was no meaning. There was no value. There was no purpose for her existence. We have to beat that. We have to provoke these questions to get people to think. God has to exist for us to have that. So this is, again, my purpose is, these are all evangelism tools that what I'm giving. All right. Let's keep going. We are all going to die. That's a good thing, people. We have no hope of immortality if God does not exist. Oh, wait a minute. I said it's all good. We're going to die. Why? For me to live is Christ, but to die is gain. Oh, think about that. For me to live is Christ, to die is gain. My father, who recently passed away, I get some people who ask me, why am I happy for him? Well, my father was a musician, and he is now playing before the king, not a king, the king. He used to forget notes, and it would drive him nuts, and you could see it on his face. He was upset that he'd forgotten a note or missed a note, and he's not forgetting notes anymore and playing for the king. What joy. What joy. I know my father has that opportunity because he is there. It's not a question. If we all die and there is no God, what does it matter that we existed at all? Something to think about. If we die, no God, will it have even matter? Does existence have anything? Now, this kind of question, if we all die and there's no God, what does it matter what that we existed at all? There's a guy, his name is Descartes. He actually got hired by the Catholic Church to answer this question. We might talk about that later on. I think it's important to discuss this, and you have to look at Descartes in that light. And I think some people miss that. When you read his book, Meditations, I think it's incredible. Okay, let's keep going here. Get back to the page here. Okay, man needs more than immorality for living, for life to have meaning. Does that make sense to you? It should. When man has meaning, for me, I'll just say right now, I was just talking to Sharon earlier, how I love my job now. I have more meaning in my life. I love teaching. I love doing different things. And I say I love teaching. I'm not back full time. I'm not. The concept of teaching doesn't matter what you teach. You could be teaching. For me, that's everything. What do I mean? I teach adults, I teach children, I teach whatever. Now, if I'm going to, sometimes I teach Sunday school, sometimes I teach adults in church, sometimes I do this. I mean, just There's different ways. Today, I get to teach whoever listens. And that's a lot of how I look at it. And this is exciting for me. The opportunity to teach people how to share Christ. This is it. To me, this is the ultimate. Have your life to have meaning. If I know more people are going to go to heaven because of something I share, okay, I'm excited. If I know that I can't shut up because this is stuff that excites me, I'm sorry. You're stuck with me being excited. All right, let me go on. If life ends at the grave, then it makes no difference if you live life like a saint or as a sinner. You will run into people like this. They'll ask that question. Why should I be good? Doesn't make any difference. There's no God. Okay, let's think about that. So is it okay if somebody walks up and kills you right now? Would that be okay? And the person be like, what? I had this conversation on the street. You're okay since there's no God, you're okay with someone just walking up. It's okay. Everybody can do what they want. That's what you're saying, right? There's no morality. What do you mean someone can just come up and, oh, well, if there's no God, there's no morality. There's no right and wrong, so anybody can do what they want. Give me all your money. This is the stuff we have to provoke people to think about. It's absurd. That is the point of this argument. It is totally absurd. And they have to see this. This quote is from Richard Wurmbrand. He wrote, "The cruelty of atheism is hard to believe when man has no faith in the reward of good or the punishment of evil. There is no reason to be human. There is no restraint from the depths of evil which is in man." The communist torturers often said, "There is no God, no hereafter, no punishment for evil. We can do what we wish." Now, Richard Wurmbrand, he knows what he's talking about. He even heard one torturer even say, "I thank God in whom I don't believe that I have lived to this hour when I can express all the evil in my heart." He expressed an unbelievable brutality and torture he inflicted on prisoners. That's in his book, Tortured for Christ. I recommend it to everybody. This is the joy of atheism. Now, I suggest everybody go to Lloyd DeJong's site and you watch his pieces. I think he has two parts up now on atheism. It should shock you. It should abhor you. It should bother you because of the evil. Yes, yeah. I love this book. I have about four or five of his books, Torture for Christ. Richard Wurmbrand's books. So let's think about this. What difference does it make if God exists? If God exists, then there is hope for man. Sounds good to me. Biblical Christianity rocks. It gives life value, meaning, joy. Again, I can sit here and smile. I know where my dad and mom are. I know where I'm going. I'm working my way there. What do you think I'm working my way to get there? Funny thing is, I don't do anything. While I say I'm working my way, I'm trying to get myself to stay on the right path. We all aren't perfect. I'm definitely not perfect. So you have to think about where you're going. You have to plan your way ahead. You have to fight to do the right thing. What difference does it make? Again, the joy in living as a believer, the joy in knowing a God who loved you first. So let me put it here's something that actually happened. I was out in my 20s, and I was taking a teenager out. He wanted to do evangelism, and he'd never done it before. So I took him out with me to pass out tracts. And we're downtown, and we're stopped at a bus stop, just passing out tracts there. And he's really never done this before. So I said, why don't you go read this tract to the young man sitting over there? So he takes the tract, goes over, and he starts to read to him. And the guy who's sitting down and he's reading to it, he gets all excited. He says, I've been waiting for you all day. He was so excited. He accepted the Lord right there, right in front of us. That was exciting. I can't even communicate the joy I felt just being there, being part of it. Then something else happened. He asked us what church to go to. We told him it didn't matter. He was like, what do you mean it doesn't matter? He says, you just have to find a church where you can fellowship with God. It doesn't matter which church we go to. The point is you need to find a church that teaches the Bible. Okay? We gave him a couple churches that we knew of in the area. He was excited. We start to walk away. This guy is so excited, having accepted Christ. He turns around to the guy next to him and says, you know what just happened to me? I just accepted Christ. And let me share with you. He started to preach to the guy next to him. Do you think that's joy? I have been telling this story for over 30 years. And I will never, ever forget that moment. To think that something like that could happen. Wow. Wow. I still get excited thinking about it. All right. Getting back into the apologetic arguments. This is from Leibniz. Why is there something rather than nothing? Now, we're dealing with people who want to say, they want to make statements. Well, something isn't real. This is just all an illusion. And I hear those arguments. I say, okay, what kind of psychedelics are you on? That's my personal thought. It goes right to my head first. Okay, so let's try and deal with this logically. That's the purpose here. So we're going to get rid of the illusion by using logic. All right, let's start with this one. Everything that exists has an explanation of its existence. All right, let's take a look at that. Let's go to premise two. If the universe has an explanation of its existence, that explanation is God, because the universe is huge. I mean, it's everything. If the universe is everything, what's bigger than everything? That would have to be God. Well, we know the universe exists, right? The universe has an explanation of its existence. Therefore, the explanation of the universe's existence is God. This is really simple when you think about it. It may sound a little wordy. These are points to make people think. You're not going to be able to have these point for point when you're talking to someone who is not a believer in God. But the point is to make them think about these things. Really, you could come up to someone and say, why isn't there something rather than nothing? You can ask them that question. Think about it. Watch their expressions on their face. Because these are the people who start, saying, okay, everything's an illusion. You can't tell what's real. You ask them a question like that. How do you know the wall isn't real? Or if it's real, how do you know? We have to start someplace. All right, so here's some of the problems and answers with Leibniz. Because this is the atheist will be prepared for some of these, because they've taken this basic class in philosophy. Usually that's all they've taken, philosophy 101. And they catch the, you'll get a crummy teacher and they'll get it wrong. Premise one, if everything that exists has an explanation, then God must have an explanation. Wait a minute. Do you know what the meaning of God is my question on that one? Let's think about that. The believers say that God is his own explanation for being. The buck stops there. Yeah. That's the answer. The atheists say, but why does the buck stop there? Why not stop with the universe? The universe is a thing. God is a person. He is personal. He is loving. Now you have to start asking, if you get somebody this question and you have to start thinking about what is their concept of God? Now you can start asking them, what do you define God as? If they're already saying they don't believe in him, now you've got them thinking, well, how do you define God? Maybe they define God, and most of the people I meet like this, their concept of a God is very, very small. He's one of those ones you can put in a box, take them out, and put them back again. That's a really small God. But what if that God that they think is so small is actually immense, bigger than the universe? What do they say now? Now, let's think what Leibniz meant. Something exists necessarily. Things that exist, this is again wordily, forgive me, things that exist necessarily exist by necessity of their own nature. It is impossible for them not to exist. Existing necessarily, it has, the only thing that can cause itself, I mean, it can't not exist. This would be God. Some things are produced by external causes. Things that are caused to exist by something else don't exist necessarily. They exist because something else has produced them. Let's see. Mom and Dad got together and, I'm here. Let's see. I have a microphone here. Somebody made it. They caused it to come into being. Makes sense. But God, if God is his own cause, he exists because it's impossible for him not to exist, because I couldn't exist without this concept of God being real. It goes back, it's kind of, you say, this is kind of wordy, but the concepts are important to grasp. All right. Now, I'm going to share with you something called the cosmological argument. And when I do that, I always share this video. Oops, sorry.
Thank you for watching. This took me like 25 hours.
Think about that. That all started with one touch. One touch. Hold on just a second. And I got to change my... I'm going to have to stop sharing for just a second and come back out. Because I want to be able to enjoy sharing again. So, just have to go back. Share screen. Here we go. There we go. All right, so we're getting into the cosmological argument. If you haven't guessed it, we're talking about a first cause. That first touch. Anybody enjoy the video? I'll tell you, that's... It always gets people... Whenever I teach this class, they're like, wow. I'm not that patient. I don't think I could sit around and put that together. Darcy said, there's a movie called Genesis I watched years ago that really made an impression on me. Yeah, let's share that out. Darcy says, there's a movie called Genesis I watched years ago that really made an impression on me and brought a clearer perspective of creation. Love it. Love it. Here we go. Cosmological argument. The first cause argument. This is the basic argument. Everything that exists has a cause. It's impossible for there to be an eternal amount of causes. So you can't go back forever saying, cause. This is caused by this. This is caused by this. You can't do that forever. There's no eternal chain of caused causes. That's what they're saying. There must be a first cause of all that exists, which is the universe. That is self-causal. So if the universe has a cause, it has to be self-caused because you have to have an end. This is logical. There has to be a beginning. Again, this is logic. It's one of the reasons why I think logic should be taught everywhere. That cause that causes itself to exist, we call God, who freely chose to create the universe. Oh, so we're talking about, again, remember, God loved us first, okay? He freely chose to create the universe. He gave us this love freely. And think about that. Everything comes back to him. It's just like that first domino. Okay, the dominoes were there. Who put them up? They didn't magically appear. Somebody pushed that first domino that fell. You know, it just happened to be the creator of the person who put them all together. Think about it. All right. Again, what does this tell us about God? I mean, it tells us we have a loving God, a God who loved us first. That, to me, anybody else want to comment on that?
It shows me that it's not only someone who pushed the dominoes, but someone who perfectly aligned them to make a specific structure to look in a certain way. And yeah. Not like, for example, how we can misalign one domino and it ends in the middle, but everyone is after the other.
Yeah, I would be the one who does something wrong. That's me. I mean, that's where I look at the beginning of it too. I would be the one to get like halfway through if I got that far, and everything goes wrong from that point. We have a creator who designs things perfectly. That's why you are important. Think about that. Your God designed you perfectly. Our God, this wonderful God that we serve, he cares about you. He made you perfect. And that's something to think about. I have my own issues, but it's God who made me. I have epilepsy. I have diabetes, but still God made me. He made me this way for a purpose. That's the thing to think about. This is why we went through this argument absurdum. We did that first for a reason. It's absurd if God doesn't exist. Now we're talking about how you can prove God exists. Oh, you start with that argument for an absurdum, and you go here. It's a little powerful. Let's keep going. The historical, yet Plato, he has an argument for motion. You know, I'm just going to go through these a little quick. It kind of repeats, so forgive me. All things do become, have become, and will become, some by nature, some by art, and some by chance. This is his argument, okay? He says some things are in motion and others are at rest. Some, those things that move are in place and those things that are at rest are in place. Some things in motion, others at rest. Don't we teach this in physics? Those things that move are in place, in a place, and those things that are at rest are in a place. Again, we teach this in physics. Do we discuss it? Believe it? We do. Those first two premises are taught every year in your basic physics class. Premise three, it's possible that those things that change, the other can be changed also. Oh, another thing we teach in basic physics class. Premise four, that which can be moved by another can never be the beginning of change. So everything we normally teach in physics, this last part never gets taught. Think about that. They teach one, two, three. Every year in introductory physics, in every high school, all the way across America, probably in Canada, many places.
But you know, it's even talk about that. It's even funnier that they teach sometimes in philosophy classes, logic, you know, and ethics and stuff like that. Yet they don't really apply it.
Yes, my sister had a atheist philosophy teacher, and I kind of think that's like a oxymoron. I don't know how you can put the two together, because if you want to see books that draw men to Christ, that draw women to Christ, Bertrand Russell's Why I'm Not a Christian, written by an atheist philosopher, people read that and come to Christ. David Hume's book, they read that and come to Christ. They realize God has to be real after reading these books by atheists. It never ceases to amaze me. And I've met people that said they were atheists. They read these books and came to Christ.
Anyway, you can write those two books in the comment or the personal chat.
So this is
Bertrand. I already came to Christ, but I just want to read it as reference.
Yeah. Bertrand Russell. Why I'm Not a Christian. And I do not remember the name I can't think of the other one now. David Hume. David Hume, I can't think of his book. But you look up David Hume, he's another atheist philosopher. People read those books and they come to Christ. It never ceases to amaze me. Yeah, thank you, Leah. I think that's hilarious, you know. They meant something to be horrible, and it turns out to be so much more powerful. All right, let's keep going. Number six here. That which moves itself is capable of changing others is the beginning of all change. So this point never, ever, ever is touched. Because you can't do, if you don't do point four, you can't get to the conclusion. Oh. So you go to a Christian school. Guess what they're discussing? One, two, three, four, and the conclusion in basic physics class. You do that in a Jewish school, they're going to do the same thing. One, two, three, four, and the conclusion. Because if you leave these two out, it's like giving you tools. And so it's like me giving you a screwdriver, giving you a hammer, and not giving you access to nails and screws. it's just kind of nutty. You got to have all the tools. You can't have just pieces. All right. St. Augustine, he said this. When we see a footprint, we conclude that an animal whose footprint this is has passed by. And when we see smoke, we know there's a fire beneath. When we hear the voice of a living man, we think of the feeling in his mind. Think about that. But who should we be thinking of? St. Thomas had this argument called the motion argument. It's certain and evident some things are in motion. So this is going to sound similar to Plato's argument. Motion is a thing's movement and its potency towards that which is in motion. A thing that moves is an act. Again, these are going to be somewhat repetitious. Forgive me. A motion is nothing else than the reduction of something from potency to act. Again, you're hearing these same principles. Does it sound like they're stealing from each other? Probably. Premise two, it's not possible that the same thing should be at once both action and potency. Again, this is basic physics. Whatever is in motion now was put into motion by another. Taught in every physics class. There can be no infinite regress of mover in motion. Ah, wait a minute. That is taught in college physics. It's called the law, the third law of thermodynamics. Oh, you have to wait to college to learn that? Sad.
Yeah, it's shocking that, like, you don't know why they're not teaching it in high school.
Well, really what bothers me, I was just saying earlier, is they don't teach logic in college, in high school anymore. They've deleted it from the math curriculum, at least in New York State. I have serious issues with this. We have kids who can't have a good discussion. They can't debate. And I think that's part of the reasons why they're killing each other. They don't know how to come to conclusions without the assistance of adults or others who understand basic logic. And that's problematic. Again, the conclusion here is there must be something which in itself is moved and is capable of moving others, which we understand to be God. All right. And this is the necessary being. I'm going to skip through this one. All right. Criticism. Okay, we get Hume. And we're talking about the same thing. All these causations and effects are merely coinciding events. They merely coexist, neither causing the other. Wait a minute. Think about that. Coincidence. You ever hear someone say there's no such thing as coincidences? Let's see. You watch most shows that have to do with forensics. No such thing as coincidences. They'll say it all the time. NCIS, that's one of their favorite saying. There's no such thing as a coincidence. You watch detective stories. There's no such thing as coincidence. Why do they say that? Because 99.999999% of the time, that's the truth. Does it happen? I would say by design. So is it a coincidence? Merely coexist, neither causing the other. So if God was to coexist, really, could God coexist outside? That'd be a very boring God. First of all, he couldn't love us first if he just coexisted and had no care. There's actually something that out there called process theism. I had a friend. He was all into process theism. God created us and then just sat back and he's doing nothing. He's just watching everything. I'm like, how can you hold that belief? I listened to this belief and I was like, wait a minute. God is real. He does things. So in college, he was going through the classes with me. And I talked to a professor and like, what can you do to get this guy wake up? He says, I have a plan. He grabbed this guy and took him on a mission trip. He came back You know how I used to be a process theist? Oh, no more. I've seen God act. I've seen this. He starts talking about all these things he saw, like his eyes are bugging out of his head. Yeah, there's no such thing. He says that is just imaginary. God is real. Oh, when you meet people, again, some things will make you laugh. If you had seen this gentleman earlier in life and seen the change in his life from one mission trip, wow. And he's, you know, I asked the professor about that. You took somebody you knew who really wasn't a believer. He says, I do that every year. I'm like, wow, why? He said, some people just need to see God act. I would never have thought of that. Here's another argument against causation. What about the possibility of a plurality of first causes, which is polytheism? Let's think about that. Can you have a first? Can you have several first causes? Well, that doesn't work because if there's more than one, this would call for an infinite regress of causes. So it doesn't work. Think about it. It doesn't work. It just doesn't work. Today, they are going to use the concept of parallel worlds and stuff like that. For an explanation, again, that creates an infinite regress, and that goes against the laws of logic. Then we have Anselm's ontological argument, studying of existing, study of being. God is something that which nothing greater than can be conceived. That's by St. Anselm. He wrote, it is wholly, anomalous against the norm to worship anything. Limited in any thinkable manner. So this comes from John Hick. I'm sorry. I keep talking about when we do the series Dissecting the Quran. And I keep thinking about how small this God is that's described in the Quran. It never ceases to shock me that people are willing to worship something that has chronological impairment. I mean, if he can't tell what comes first, he can't tell which prophet came first. He can't tell, you got to sit there and like, wait a minute. If he can't get things in order and he's supposed to be God, we have a problem here. He's little bitty, bitty, ditty, tiny thing. He can't get things, that simple thing, right? Okay. Let's take a look at the Greek gods. Okay, we have Greek god of war. Okay, where's his power? Okay, only over war. All right, that's a little bitty tiny thing. How about the god of love? Okay, and their idea of love is lust. Ugh. Little bitty tiny thing. But a god who loves without lust, who loves first, doesn't expect anything in return. He wants something in return. He wants our love. He's not asking for anything. He did it because he gave his life for us because he loved us. Whoa. Is that worth worshiping? To me, it is. These little things are just not worth it. So does anybody have a problem with the cosmological argument that they can think of? Wow. It was funny because the first time I put this question up, I had people sit there stunned. Like, wait a minute. It's all based on logic. How can we have a problem with it? And I'm always wondering if we'll get somebody to discuss that. And the idea today, is that I want you to think about, can you use these arguments that I presented today, can you use them to teach others about Christ? Can you use the concepts to reach out and say, hey, Jesus is real? Anybody got an answer? Can you do that? All right. I guess we'll go on. I didn't think we'd finish this as fast. All right. I'm getting better at this. Okay. Big Bang Theory. Here we go. The universe was created from a huge accidental explosion. You've heard of the Big Bang Theory show. And most of us have heard of the concept of the Big Bang Theory. And I always laugh when I hear people say, oh, yeah, the Big Bang, you know, there's no God that comes along with that. Okay, let's think about the guy who wrote this. Okay, person who proposed this theory is Lamotte. I cannot say his name correctly in French. Lamotte, I think is correct pronunciation, in 1931, said it started as the result of an explosion of the primeval atom. Oh, wait a minute. We have a problem here. For all those people who are saying there's no such thing as God, there's no such thing as a first cause, they left something out. The creation of the first atom. Dragon, I know that one. It depends on who you talk to. And most of the people I talk to don't know this part. They don't know that the theory was based on the creation of the first atom. So if we're going to use the argument of Big Bang Theory, I accept it. And they look at you funny when you say that. I accept it. It works for me, the creation of the first atom. Wait a minute. They look, what do you mean creation? Well, that's what the guy said when he created it. The explosion comes from the prime, but primeval means it was created. It didn't just, it had to come from someplace. It had to exist. What? Yeah. When you talk to atheists, again, I love this. Dragon's pulling out the important points. Again, theories. I love this. And this is where my students would go nuts when I'm teaching classes on science. Dragon has pulled out the all-important, most important thing. Big Bang Theory is just a theory. It's not a fact. I love this. You would not believe how many times my students say, yes, Mr. Sutliff, a theory does not have to be a fact. It can be, but it is not a fact. It can be. So theories are just ideas. Oh, I can say I can accept it. Well, see, my God is a little bit more personal than just standing by and watching things happen. My God does things by design. Oh, I'm setting you up.
Yeah.
All right. Here we go. And forgive me. I hope this doesn't. Okay. Material universe resembles the intelligent production of human beings in that it exhibits design. This is called the design argument. Think about that. The material universe. So take a look at this. And this is one of the things I'll go back and show why. Okay. So these are schematics. Electronics, all right? And I go back, and this is something that blew my mind. I started looking at this. Look at this design. This is just a leaf. You have the upper, you have the cuticle, the upper epidermis, xylem, phylum, all these things perfectly put into place. Think about it. Design in any human artifact is the effect of having been made by an intelligent being. Do you agree with that? Design in any human artifact. So anything made by humans is the effect of having been made by an intelligent being. So let's talk about something simple. How about a pencil? Most of us have used pencils. So simple. What does it have in it? It has graphite, not lead these days. It's graphite. Okay. It has a piece of, it has wood. A lot of them come with erasers and metal, and they're a good combination. Think about it. The human being, I would say it's perfectly designed. Take a look at it. It's an amazing network that if you ever have to study the body, I've only had to take basic bio. My son's a medic. Very proud of him. I can't even imagine the amount of work he's had to learn and done. He's now finishing his paramedic, and I can't tell you how excited I am that he's doing this. There are some amazing things about the human body that those people who study, they know. It's just incredible. All right, let's keep going here. Like effects have like causes. Makes sense. Okay. Design in the material universe is the effect of having been made by an intelligent creator. Let's think about that. So if a hammer, let's make it real simple. Oh, we'll pick on Sharon. Sharon, are you an artist? I think Sharon's an artist.
Yeah, I draw and paint. Yeah.
So Sharon, if I look at one of your paintings, I would believe that there is an artist behind that, right? Paint didn't just throw up there by any way. It didn't vomit up there, did it?
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
Okay. You actually take time and care about where you put the paint.
Depends. depends on doing realistic versus abstract.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I have to say that I have seen even with abstract, I still see some care in how it's done.
I'm going to tell you the truth. I'm not a fan of abstract. To me, you can throw paint anywhere. But I am more of a realist because I do love drawing portraits.
Oh, wow.
So that's my forte, but I do like scenes.
I do. I like nature scenes. Those are my best, my favorite things. So let's pick on Mona Lisa or something else we know that's beautiful out there. I can actually like Picasso. So you look at those things, you know that they show a creator. So take a look at a sunset. They are things of beauty. And I wish I'd put one in here, but to me, there's nothing more beautiful sometimes than a sunset, just to be able to be out there. I will try to show you a picture shortly of that. All right. I have it up on my, I mean, I like sunset so much. It's the background for my computer. All right. I think it just proves an intelligent creator. That's me. Oh, sorry. All right. So I would usually tell you to break out in groups, but we don't have a way to do that. And the other way to share about what you learned to convince somebody that God is real, how did that go? The idea here is everything I've given you, you can use. I mean, I'm going to say use it or lose it. This is the thing. You have to, what does that mean? Get out there, run into people. Don't be afraid to have a conversation. Start the conversation. I have one of the evangelists I know, one of his first questions when he starts talking, he greets and talks and says hello. And he gets to this question as time goes on. He talks, I ask him how they're doing. And then he'll say, do you know where you're going when you die? And he gets an answer like, well, I'm a good person, so I'm going to heaven. Really? Do you think because you're good, you get to go to heaven? And it starts a whole thing. Or he gets, another one. Well, I don't think we go anyplace. I think you're just returned to dust. All these points that can get you to start a conversation and maybe plant a seed. See, God reaps the harvest. We don't. He gets to see it. We don't. That's the exciting part. You know what I like is that he gets to do the work. We just get to plant the seeds. He gets to do the watering. Uses one person. God does a whole bunch of those things. This is just a tool.
Hey, Paul.
Yes.
Sometimes, don't you think that some people are just in a state of questioning whether there's a God? So
yes.
Oh, okay.
I think that's actually important. So you'll meet people that are there. They're not sure. And this is, I think, where we're going next. So you're actually setting me up for my next part.
Okay.
So this is my, if you have a piece of paper on you right now, grab a piece of paper, and I want you to put on it a dot or a circle representing all of your knowledge. Okay? I want you to put a circle of all of your knowledge. Okay? And then I would like you to, on that same piece of paper, put a circle of all knowledge.
The paper's not big enough.
So, this is where I get a good laugh. See, agnostics, atheism can say they know God doesn't exist. Really? You just told me you don't know everything. Here's the funny thing about this is actually study this circle thing. There's an actual study done, and I'll go on because this circle drives me nuts. All right. So here's where you can take this and go with it. So I've met people who, and the study, it's a study. The study shows that people who have a elementary school or they draw a larger circle. People who have a high school diploma draw a smaller circle. People who have a college degree draw a smaller circle. People who have a doctorate put a dot about their knowledge. You'd expect the circle to get bigger, wouldn't you? But the truth is, the people who know more know there's a whole lot more out there that they don't know. And that's that. When I read that the first time about that study, I just sat there and laughed because it makes sense to me. But this is the stuff that, it makes you think. And we'll see how this is going faster than I thought. I didn't expect to get this far. This would normally be the end of my first class. And I am getting a weather alert, believe it or not, which should be a thunderstorm if that's what they're talking about. I just got to check. And that's just weird. It's not working. All right. Let's keep going. Let's see what we can start. Oh, I don't know if we want to do this. Yeah, I think we can start it. Looks kind of mean, doesn't it? Let's see how far we get. Yeah, you know what? I'll say that for next time. Next time I want to do the problem of evil. And the problem of evil, which I think is funny. People use the problem of evil for an argument against God. So I've sat in philosophy classes and listened to this taught. I had one of the world's best teachers. And I brag about him. And you don't hear very many people brag about the professors. I had Dr. David Basinger. And a lot of how he taught is reflected in how I teach. I hope I can be that good. He was in many ways an inspiration to my whole, even my loving teaching as well. He loved what he did. You could see it in his face. And one thing he did that drove us all nuts at Robert's Wesleyan is he would never tell you what he believed. He would always make you think things out. That's something to think about as a kid, and how you have to sit there and work things out in your own head. And that's not always an easy thing when you're 18, 17, 19, your brain isn't fully developed to handle some of these concepts. So you're sitting there, your brain is like busting, trying to think things through. I remember feeling like that. And, you know, just going through just some of the stuff we talked about. How can we use this today? What I would tell people, you never know where God will put you. And I'm just going to stop sharing for a minute here. You never know how God will use you. That is by itself one of those incredible things. That's a good thing, not knowing how God will use you. Now, I do want to share what I meant about a picture of sunset. This is a picture I took of a beautiful sunset. And to think that this kind of art isn't designed, I don't know. I am, after having watched clouds and actually taken pictures, and my son came along one day, saw one of the pictures I took, and he looked at it and said, "Dad, there's a face here." I'm like, "What are you talking about?" Okay, I see the face. And like, I'm thinking maybe I'm nuts. All right, so I go to a friend and I say, "Do you see anything unusual about this picture?" He says, "Yeah, there's a face in it." He's like, "Somebody must have drawn that." I says, "No. I just took a picture of the clouds as they're going by. And I didn't see it because, yeah, my son walked by." And, yeah, that was the first thing he said. I'm laughing. I've taken this picture and put it up. I'm like, okay. And when you see stuff, like, more and more convinced of God, how he works as he puts things together in ways that we can't imagine. This particular place, I will say, is the Ottawa River. And it's a place where I have many fond memories, and I would love to go back someday soon. But it is, again, to me, these beautiful sunsets are stuff that got me excited. I probably have about 30 pictures of sunsets, if not more. I love taking pictures of sunsets. God does amazing things. I think it's time for us to start stepping up because he does those amazing things. Who can we talk to? How can we reach out to someone we don't know? Sometimes I think it's just starting the conversation. Well, what does that mean? If you walk into a store and you shop, if you're like me, sometimes you're probably pretty quiet. You just go through the store and grab stuff and you put it in your cart and you keep going. What happens if you say hello? If you run into someone and find a way to start a conversation? Sometimes it's just that start, that first time. Okay. The next time you have another conversation, you're saying hello, you get to know somebody a little bit better. Great. Get to know someone. Reach out, touch them through Christ by being caring. One of the most important things I ever heard of, which I talk about as much as I can, is the concept of friendship evangelism. Now, what does that mean? I have a friend, his name is Herb, and he did what we called Starbucks evangelism. So he would go to Star, he'd always start, "Well, I was in Starbucks and I met so-and-so and he was having a bad day and I was listening to him. You know, he lost this particular guy. He lost his wife or something. And I just sat there and listened to him." When you think about that, that's not an easy thing for anybody to go through. And this guy didn't have anybody to talk to. And Herb just sat there and listened. And as he told the story, he started thinking about, how would you feel if you were alone? Would you want someone to just sit there and listen? Because that's all he did. In the end, the guy asked him questions. How did he know? How did Herb, how come Herb was so confident that he would be with Christ when he left? So he knew that about Herb before even Herb even brought it up. He could see it on him. He knew. That's the interesting part. This person ends up going to church with Herb. He invited him. Now, I can't tell you how many Starbucks stories we all heard. Herb always taught it to us as friendship evangelism, being there. How many friends do you have in your neighborhood? How many associates do you have? Acquaintances do you have? How are you working on making them deeper? And I'll be honest, it's not an easy thing for me. What if we all take a stab at stretching out a little bit farther, reaching out to someone new? Try one a week. I'm not going to say you need to meet someone new every day. For some of us, that's not always a possibility. But what if we do that? What if we try to reach out to touch someone for Jesus? And that's how you got to look at it. I'm trying to reach out to share Christ. Wow. What does it mean if you do that? When we get to the topic of Islam, we're going to get to many topics in here. I think some will blow your mind. I have Jehovah's Witnesses in here we're going to talk about. I have Mormons we're going to talk about. I have a whole slew of things we can talk about. I have to change a lot of what I put in on Islam because of the more I have learned. And I'm trying to think about how I would change because what's more important to me now. And going through, I credit Dr. Kufar Phobia for the series that we're doing, Dissecting the Quran, for really changing how I've thought of Islam. I credit Lloyd DeJong for helping me think of things differently. Yeah, I look at Jesus as God, as perfection, as such an example of love. And then I always sit there and I marvel sometimes that this God loved me first. I am by no means perfect. I am by no means anything to brag about. I know that more than anyone. I can sit there and laugh because I know this God who loves me chose to love me first. You know, there's times I get frustrated. How could you love me? I do this, I do that. I'm wrong. I'm not perfect. I did this stupid thing. I did that stupid thing. I wish I could turn around time and do these other things right. And then I stop and I think, for all the stupid things I've done, would I be the same person today if I hadn't done those stupid things and had to learn the horrible lessons I'm learning still to this day? Some of your stupid actions have penalties. Well, we learn from those. Maybe they make us better. Because I think they do. I think that's why we're allowed to go through some horrible things. Our God is a great God. Why not be that person who is sitting there listening? If all you do is listen. I went to visit a student once, got hit by a car, and he was unconscious. And I went and I just sat in the room with him. I think I stayed an hour. He never forgot that. I didn't tell him I was there. Now, this wasn't my best student. He wasn't my worst student. But the concept that someone was there, if that's enough for him to come to Christ, to me that means more. Just being there. He was unconscious. He didn't know I was there. Someone told him. That's my thought, because he couldn't know. He couldn't physically know, as far as my understanding. I have been in places where God has put people to protect people, members of my family. And I look at that as God acting and being there for me when I can't be. We serve a God that's bigger than we can imagine. These little gods of Islam, Buddha, all these other little gods that exist out there. They're little things. When a God loves you first, despite all your stupidity, ignorance, willful stupidity, and willful ignorance, desires for whatever you do wrong, what does that say about who we are? And all the more about who created us, that he would love us still. I'll sit here and smile, because I know that this God who loves us loves beyond my own concept of imagination about how to love. Boy, am I thankful, because you wouldn't want me as a God. You would not want me. I'm not that good. God is that much greater. Thank you all for listening. I'm going to be doing this series till it's done, and my hope is that you can use these little tidbits as learning tools to share the gospel. God bless everybody. Thank you for joining us. Oh, Darcy and Sharon, did you have anything you want to say?
No, not at this time. Thank you, though.
Darcy?
Yeah, I just have one question for all the atheists that might be listening. Mm-hmm. How do you explain if one atom comes about, have its own mind in order the next atom, a tree or a human or what? I mean, Big Bang doesn't make any sense to me. Thanks, Paul.
God bless. Have a good night, everybody.
Good night.
Yeah, good night.